that made me.
Now, the year that made me, as our loyal listeners know, is a chance for famous and interesting people to look back and discuss the pivotal year of their lives. Today, something a little different. We're going to look back at a year that was pivotal in all of our lives. 2001 was the year, of course, of the collapse of the Twin Towers in New York, an act of terrorism and murder that seemed for many to prove the inadequacies of liberalism. It sparked wars in Afghanistan and then Iraq, which in turn, of course, sparked more wars. 2001 now has a new book, The Year That Changed Everything, by Sydney-based writer and publisher Philippa McGuinness. It was also, as she makes clear, a year that she can never forget for other reasons. Philippa McGuinness, welcome.
Thank you so much.
What was 2001 before the Twin Towers? What was it about that year that started to make it feel like a different year?
I think working back from 9/11, Tampa was different. I don't think we'd seen anything like that in Australian politics, and we're still dealing with it.
Tampa, for those who perhaps are too young to remember, was the moment at which a Norwegian container ship picked up about 450, I think, odd people off a sinking boat, and
wound up
being the standoff off Christmas Island. Mm. You were not in Australia for that, so you had a slightly unusual perspective at that time. How, sometimes when you step outside your own country, you start to see it perhaps as others might see your country. How did the Tampa thing play in Singapore?
It was extremely challenging. First of all, because I couldn't make sense of it myself. You know, Tampa was at once a word that we can italicize because it was the name of a ship, but it was also a crisis that went beyond that ship and really brushed up against Australia's attitudes towards asylum seekers and perhaps even to foreigners in general, foreigners who were not white. And being in Singapore, where I would say the best known Australian politician at that time was Pauline Hanson, a lot of Singaporeans would say to me that they assumed Pauline Hanson was driving this new policy of not letting asylum seekers set foot on Australian soil. And I had to grapple with explaining to people that no, actually it wasn't Pauline Hanson herself. It was the government. It was the, you know, the elected government. It didn't just happen as a result of Tampa. It had been happening all year. The detention centres across Australia from, you know, Port Hedland to Villawood were full. There were really distressing reports of riots and hunger strikes and people stitching their lips. It was horrific. But Tampa was like a lightning rod for all these emotions and uncertainties and fears that had been circulating. And Howard won the election.
Mm. The other thing that had happened just before the election, of course, was 9/11 in New York. I want to talk about that separately in a way, because it was momentous internationally and for Australia. George W. Bush had been inaugurated at the beginning of the year after a highly contested election. It was also a time when a lot of businesses were collapsing, ANZ collapses, collapsed. You know, insurance companies like HIH, people have forgotten it now, was a big collapse. You say in the book that had it not been for the terrorist attacks, that it would probably have been remembered as a year of corporate collapses.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. When I put the proposal together, I knew about HIH. I think I knew about ANZ, but being out of the country, it wouldn't have played on my mind in the same way that it did here. And also, it happened pretty much in the same week as 9/11. So much got lost. I'd forgotten about the collapse of a company like OneTel, and that was huge. So I think that that fed a lot of uncertainty in Australia. And also there were real fears we would go into recession. But ANZ was huge. I think it added to the sense of instability that people had, that if this long-standing company, to which people felt incredible loyalty, and not just because of their golden miles or whatever, they had flown with ANZ for many years. Their parents had flown with ANZ, and all of a sudden it collapsed. And I think people, and not just those passengers who were stranded or the 16,000 ANZ employees who lost their jobs, Australians in general thought, what next? What else can happen?
Well, other things did happen. You're listening to Philippa McGuinness, whose book is The Year Everything Changed, 2001. And, of course, more than anything else that changed was what happened in the Twin Towers. Where were you?
I was in Singapore. I was sitting on my couch in my living room. I turned on the television just before 9 o'clock, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like millions, billions of people around the world, I saw the second plane fly into the tower live. And I thought myself, as so many people have said to me, I thought I was watching a movie. It just didn't make sense. I immersed myself in stories and reports and accounts of 9/11. And even as I sit here, I can hardly believe it happened. You know?
17 years on, it still seems remarkable, doesn't
it? Yeah, it just seems so impossible that such a thing could happen twice. And then to have a plane fly into the Pentagon, you know, the fortress, the symbol of American might and power, is extraordinary. And then reading about the fourth plane that crashed into a field in Pennsylvania, I still think, I mean, I think about the people on all the planes, in the towers, everyone who died. But for those people on that plane who knew what had happened to the others, for them to take the step that they did.
They fought for control of the plane from the hijackers.
That's right. And they voted to do that. Imagine having the wherewithal to do that in what you know could well be your last moments. I find it extraordinary.
It's funny, an act of American democracy at a time when American democracy was very much under fire because of the contested election before. One consequence of that was that it tended to reaffirm support behind George W. Bush, the famous scenes of him there in the still smoking ruins of the Twin Towers. And, of course, it helped John Howard in the sense that we triggered off the ANZUS Alliance agreement with the United States and we were in the middle of all of that. It was also, and this comes through in your book, your book starts with this, it was a year of the most painful tragedy for you.
It was. I'd arrived in Singapore pregnant, excited about having a baby, knowing that I would have some of the best antenatal care in the world, and everything was going well. Just after Christmas, I thought the baby will soon be born. I was very excited. And then one morning I woke up and I thought, I haven't felt the baby move, not since last night. And my sister was visiting our family in Singapore and she gave me good advice. She said, let's go over and get it checked out. And the midwives and then the obstetrician could find no heartbeat. And our son Daniel was stillborn. And his death, like so many stillborn babies, could not be explained. You know, I write in the book, and this is the first time I'd written or hardly, you know, I'd hardly spoken about it, not that it was a big secret. When he was born, he seemed perfect in every way, except in the most fundamental way. And we buried him on the last day of the year, New Year's Eve. So now when I look back at 2001, I think, well, it ended up being the worst year of my life. But human beings are resilient. And although the pain and loss and grief doesn't disappear, it changes, but we go on.
There's not much choice, is there, really?
There really isn't. You know, time is going to pass and move on no matter what you do. And I was lucky to go on and have another child, a beautiful boy who's now 15. So I feel blessed. But I'm glad to be able to talk about it now. And I feel that if anyone else, any other woman, if her family, her partner hears this and, you know, is in this dreadful pit of grief, but realizes it is quite common that this year the government ran a Senate inquiry into stillbirth because there is a realisation that it's a public health issue. We need to talk about it more. We need to fund more research. We need to support bereaved families. If that can happen, it can only be a good thing. But of course, I'd give anything for Daniel not to have died.
Absolutely. Cataclysmic year for you.
It really was.
As it was for the world. After that, it's hard to talk about a song, but we do this as part of the format. The song that goes with your year that made me is The Strokes, Someday. Why this song?
Oh, you know, anyone who's listening and who's just heard me tell my story will think, you know, they will expect me to play something really downbeat and sad. But I remember hearing this song and I listened to it a lot while I was grieving, which just shows you that grief is complicated. It came out from a band that took the world by storm in 2001, and they just happened to be young New Yorkers. You know, this music was coming out of this city that was grieving, that, you know, had been transformed. So I really love that song.
Philippa McGuinness, The Year Everything Changed, 2001. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And here's The Strokes. Someday by The Strokes. That should get you up and going on a Sunday morning. The song chosen by Philippa McGuinness for The Year That Made Me, 2001.